Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here of the Damage Report. Hey, Brett. It's weird that I'm not the one that triggers that anymore. It catches me by surprise. Brett, it's Friday. How's it going?
Oh, gosh. Every day at this house, every Friday at this house, we break out some Rebecca Black on a day like this. And not to brag, but she did go to high school for a brief moment with Sophie Morrison, our producer.
There's been a lot of talk about who went to whose high school on this Skype call today.
I want to say something very specific about my frustrations with, I want to say, Skype right now. Because on my new computer by Artesian Builds, where you too can get up to $100 off by entering your TYT code at checkout, sir, it really looks gorgeous on my end.
Yeah.
But via Skype, And that's what I've been encountering is my computer is a beast. I want to say 10 to 20 times better than yours. Yeah, because it's got multiple cores.
Yeah, I got multiple.
Just want to say thanks and a shout out to Artesian Builds, who's making TYT hum.
Okay, I'm sure yours is in fact actually better than mine. Yeah, no, and my shot looks great here. And, you know, when I stream directly to YouTube, when I stream through Twitch, looks great. Skype, which has been around since before there were computers to run it on, takes any signal and turns it into hot garbage. And you can't, there's no options to change that. It's not like you can, oh, if you really want to push it, you can go to 1080. No, it's just, no, garbage. That's all you get, garbage. What the hell is up with
Skype? Speaking of garbage, I'm also going to, on behalf of the Twitch channel, say there are new garbage people emotes available.
Ooh.
Which are gorgeous. Norma truly outdid herself. Not just on that, but also there's Dragon Squad emotes.
What?
There
How
are
do you
two.
Get these? Can you, have you get
to,
them?
You have to join. People, oh, it's blowing it up. John is throwing something into a trash can, and also and it's green, and there's Dragon Squads, two varieties. God bless you. I see them flapping now.
Oh, yeah, I see the garbage. I like that. That's good. Those Norma did great work on those dragons, although they are horrifying. And I will say that I never once imagined that my face would be a part of it. But but cool. No, they're very cool. And yeah, I was surprised by that. I didn't know that those were coming. But anyway, you know, glad to have you here. Obviously, we're going to be giving people an opportunity to use those garbage people emotes because we're going to be saying who our garbage people are a little bit later on in the program. It's actually, for me, one of the big stories of the day. And yeah, we're going to be chatting along with you. You can send in tweets and super chats. We'll be reading those as we go. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. That would be very nice of you. We have finally found an excuse to talk about Fortnite on the show, a game I haven't played in like 2 months now, but finally the time has come. And with that, Brett, why don't we get to one of these awesome, huge stories we've got? Okay, let's do it then. So for the past few weeks, we've been waiting to see what deal is the Senate going to come to provide much needed assistance on a number of different fronts that the American people had just been desperate for. You know, they're facing this eviction crisis. They're worried about coronavirus. There's still tons of people who are unemployed. And so finally, we've got the... No, they left. There's no deal. Nope. The Senate has officially adjourned through Labor Day, despite not coming to an agreement on its next coronavirus stimulus package. Or to... That same sentence could be said a little bit more generalized for public consumption is the Senate officially decided they get weeks off despite not doing their job during an emergency. That's the way I would have put that. Despite the biggest domestic catastrophe of our lifetimes, the Senate came back briefly after a three-day weekend, did nothing, provided no aid, and then decided they're going to leave for weeks so that they can go raise money from donors and stuff. That's
so
what
they
did.
I have a slightly different take on this, John. In my opinion, the Senate did do its job. Its job is to make sure that the people who donate to them are fine financially. And that has happened. That has happened, you know, incredibly, despite all of this. And the reason for that is that not having aid gets rid of the competition and creates the certain folding of small business, which I think makes this country happen. But the people who come together and donate in large numbers reliably are the big businesses, are the big icebergs that are going to melt last.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for all the other icebergs to just kind of disappear. And so the stock market's doing fine. They have Trump, because of the Senate not doing anything, they hand Trump a quasi-perceived win that thankfully didn't resonate as huge as he thought it would. So
with his fake executive orders, yeah.
Their terribleness has created a situation where Trump can claim a victory by cutting unemployment benefits by 33%, which is insane. But
And potentially you never even get that lower amount. And even if you do, it'll take weeks, but you probably won't. And even if you do, after the weeks, you will probably end up having to pay it back. Yeah. And, you know, I'm assuming that by December, we're all going to be rich, so paying it back won't be a problem. Yeah, exactly. And now all it costs for Mitch McConnell to do that, what you just laid out, is that people continue to wallow in unemployment and economic disaster while, you know, 1 to 1,500 people die every day. That's all it costs, which isn't actually a cost for them because they're okay. They're making huge amounts of money. Billionaires are doing very well. And so here's the thing. We did have an update from Mitch McConnell, who said that if some kind of deal is reached while the Senate is on recess, members will return to Washington, D.C. for a vote. And I would have to say that if having them in rooms together with the nation's eye on them, battling it out for 2 weeks doesn't lead to a deal, obviously them all going to different parts of the country and not speaking to each other, that's how you finally get the deal. So I'm sure that's going to happen. And we're not going to suddenly reach September 7th for them to finally come back and start again talking about some possible stimulus.
Taking August off should be a huge loss for the Senate because it's so French. It's the Frenchest thing you can do is take the entire month of August off, and they do it every day, every year, and they need to stop, and they need to suffer consequences of it. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Bernie Sanders finds this to be unacceptable, said during the worst economic crisis in modern history, it is shameful that Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans think they can take a vacation while Americans face eviction hunger. No, we can't wait. Get back to work and now, and pass legislation to help the American people. So, but on that topic of getting back to work, if you spent last night on Twitter, you might have noticed that something new was trending and it started to bubble up. When high-profile people, as well as regular Americans, start tweeting things like this from Andrew Yang. If our government doesn't get its act together, a general strike and mass unrest are around the corner. Congress, Mitch McConnell, do your job. I'm sure you will hear the same thing from the people you represent. And as I said, if they were on Twitter, they did, because hashtag general strike was trending at one point number one in politics. I just randomly snapped that. That's 155,000 people tweeting about it. And so I guess there's a number of questions, but one of the questions is, they have demonstrated to us time and time again, from the very beginning and on through to ever-increasing death tolls, that whatever need we have and express for aid, whether it's public health aid, economic aid, all electoral aid, no one in a position of power to do anything about it is going to. And it doesn't appear that there's anything on the horizon that will lead them to do that. If you don't believe, and I'm saying this to everyone, if you don't believe that they're expecting to just ride out past the election doing nothing significantly different than they are now, I don't know what you've been watching during this pandemic. And so the question is a general strike the only way to possibly get through to them? Is to get millions and millions, as many millions of Americans as possible to say, oh, you think the economy is doing just fine for you? Okay, well, let's see if we can do something about that. Is that the only way that we can possibly get through to them and force them to do something approaching their job?
Yeah. It's funny because you never hear about general strike in America. You go, anytime you go to Europe, it's someone's on some kind of massive strike getting like rights or whatever. But yeah, that's it. I just don't see it happening. I just don't see America affecting some kind of general strike. We just don't do it. It's not very us. It's this weird, I don't even like Stockholm syndrome of the people that you work for, that it's just there's something about work is my identity. Mm-hmm. In America, which is so crazy that it never gets to that. And this is one of those things that the main question for me, I guess, philosophically, as it relates to social media and mainstream, is I know that the news takes a lot of stuff from social media because it just makes journalism easier to go on
Twitter. I can attest to that.
What? It does. It does. is it like a pre-mainstream thing? Is it that the idea of a general strike will make its way into the streets of America tomorrow? Or is the idea of doing a general strike something that is very real to this generation specific? Like you see Sunrise Movement. I know that's because you follow them and you always interact with them. That's listed as the example given. But
yeah, because I follow them, so they showed
right,
up.
Right,
yeah.
I know, but they surfaced up to that. But they also probably cross-reference it against like highest follower count to tell you that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that an indication that America is moving more toward, you know, in a number of years, being that general strike country?
I would say, I mean, I also question whether it'll happen, but I do think that we are a country where it could happen in a way that we weren't 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago. I definitely think that's
the case. But at the same time, there's no union. America isn't the union country it was in, you know, a few decades ago.
Like, yeah, I get that.
No, there's no cohesive. There's a gig economy wildly hobbled by this. Mm-hmm. That I did read somewhere that like they're just going to stop. They're going to stop in some cities. I forget which, but there is no unified worker identity like there was at a time.
Perhaps.
That's what the Democrats said. And maybe a thing about Joe Biden being that like old timey Democrat is he has the opportunity to be like unions, 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 unions. Will he, can he? But I know between now and then, that's not the window for the general strike we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. I think
it's.
I don't know what else could possibly get through to them, and if we don't get through to them, like how many people are going to die? How much economic damage? I mean, we see it.
Well,
and
more people are going to die theoretically as a result of the general strike. I mean, I've heard people say like, you know, we should just have had everybody stay home in the wake of this. And I hate to be like the practical guy, but people stay home in the wake of this. Like, who's going to get you your stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and is that, and I don't know. I mean, it's the great, one of the great unanswered questions is, can America handle it? Is the ruling gajillionaire class insulated enough from this?
Yeah.
Like, while this is all happening, you know, healthcare companies just registered they doubled their profits.
Yeah.
Because no one's just kind of going to the doctor to get checked out. So they just keep taking in premiums. That's one
true.
Way that they're insulated from this pandemic.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd have to have every Amazon driver stop. But it's not like this. There's no Teamsters for Amazon drivers. There's just
I understand that, Brett. But I'm not. Obviously, the debate is not whether zero people or 100% of the population should strike. No movement, however popular, is going to cause that. But theoretically, you could reach a critical mass that would break through and cause. You know, they're always worried about uncertainty, basically, in Wall Street. Maybe that could do something. And I also don't think what I think needs to happen is a combination of both the labor-focused general strike, but also massive protests in particular in D.C. There needs to be some sort of, like we are supposed to be able to... No, I understand that. I understand that. Yes, it is going to be big, obviously, and it is going to be complex, and it's not going to be up to me. But the thing is that they don't respond to the normal mechanisms we have for expressing our interests. I mean, that's been clear for a very long time. So something else needs to happen. And I don't know exactly what it is, but obviously we need to have a conversation about it, because right now we're being left to suffer and die during a pandemic, and they don't care. And they believe that they don't have to care. They believe that they're going to be reelected not caring, that in fact they can win the presidential election again not caring. And if we don't show them that they're wrong, then they're not wrong. Like, they believe that this is true, and I worry that they're right. And so something needs to be done. I don't know exactly what that is. It's complex. Maybe we can talk it out over the course of the next few weeks on the show, but we got to start having a conversation, because our government has fallen apart from top to bottom, effectively. So we need to come up with something new to replace the normal checks and balances that we're supposed to be able to provide on our elected representatives. So there's been a lot of discussion about the Biden nomination. If he's going to be supported, what is it that is going to draw people to support him? And is whatever that variable is a good thing? Well, now we've got a little bit of data, although I'm going to make you wait for just a second. So I'm going to show you Donald Trump's numbers for this, and then we'll go to Biden. So the question is, what is it that leads you, the number one thing that leads you to support this candidate rather than the other in the presidential election? For Donald Trump, the number one answer, with 23% of polls, or those polled, says leadership and performance. 23% of the country, or at least those respondents, are out of their mind. 160 plus thousand people.
I like that. No. That's not what they mean by performance. Not job performance. They like that it's performance. It's just one big stupid performance.
That's a good point. 21 is his issue / policy positions. I would say they like him more for his issues rather than his issue. They like all of his personality issues. He is not Biden is 19%. That's true. 17%. He's for the American people and values. Which ones? Who cares? 16% are just doing it for purely partisan reasons. That's pretty low number, actually. 11%, he tells it like it is, his personality. Oh, you do not want to be in an elevator with a his personality voter. And 12% is other. I guess QAnon? I don't know. Something like that. 13% wouldn't say. Just answer the question, America. Jesus. But anyway, before we move on to Biden, anything from that, Brett?
It adds up to more than 100, so it's just like, hey, what are your thoughts on anything? Do any of these look tasty? Mm-hmm. Load up your plate. I like that he is not Biden. Like, the psychology of someone filling out a poll when that person is a Trump supporter is hilarious. Like, you're kind of shocked. They must limit the number of things you can say. Because I would say that probably if you're a Trump supporter, you're like, yeah, everything. All of the above.
Well, I believe for this, you were allowed to pick one thing. I don't remember. I don't know exactly why. It could be rounding, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's obviously more than 100. The way that it's worded in the larger graphic that I have is the main reason. I don't know.
Main reason.
Maybe they allowed.
Gotcha.
But anyway,
and they're just bad at following directions.
Maybe that could be true. Now here's the thing. So let's show them the Donald Trump again for just a second, so you can get a feel for the distribution of answers, where that he is not Biden is. And now let's move to the Biden one. Coming in at number one with 56% of the vote, he is not Trump, which is also Biden's favorite thing about Biden, oddly enough. But anyway, and then you have basically very similar numbers of what's left at similar distributions as Trump, once you account for the fact that the majority answer is he is not Trump. So this is, I think, what we've suspected. It could be that that's to some extent a self-fulfilling prophecy, but regardless, is that a bad thing?
Well, what it tells me is there's something about Biden. It is that he's not Trump, but there's something about him. And with Donald Trump, there's really nothing about him. They're all kind of the same.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's one way to look at this that I don't think other people are looking at it. Like, but the obvious thing to look at it as is people, most presidencies are a referendum on the incumbent.
Yes.
In a real
election.
This isn't
new.
Period.
Yeah.
And frequently it comes down to what you like about the new option or what you don't like about the previous option. But like, this makes sense to me because of who Trump is and how he runs the country. There's so much about him that people just need to stop. Yeah. She's like, I can't anymore. This is ridiculous. Like, look around the nation. They're doing things right now to, like, seize ballot boxes. Mm-hmm. Because the new ballot box is not at your church. It's not at the local elementary school. The new ballot box is a mailbox. And they're just picking them up off the street. Like, this is psychotic. This should not happen in America. But it continues to happen in America. And I need it to stop. And in order for it to stop, I need someone who's not the current president.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if this exact same comparison has been done in past elections. I would assume that the challenger, he is not blank, is probably fairly large. As you said, these are referendums. Now, look, in an ideal world, as we've been saying for a long time, anyone who supported, for instance, say Bernie Sanders in the primary, would hope that Bernie was the candidate and his issue slash policy positions, or he is for American people and values, because for a lot of people, the way ideology works, those are going to sort of fill the same box, would be the huge percentage that it's, I'm picking this person for what they will do. That would be ideal. But looking at this, is it bad for Biden that a lot of people like that he's not Trump? Not necessarily. I mean, he's still winning in the polls. And I would say, I know that a lot of people will respond with, I've heard a lot over the last like 4 years, don't vote based out of fear, or don't vote against something, vote for something. And I would have to say that with all due respect, I don't really think that either of those things actually means anything. I don't think that that's how voting works. When you choose between two things, you're doing a comparison. Some people might only think about one or two things when they do that comparison. Some people, you know, if politics is their life, they might think about 20 or 30 or 40. But at the end of the day, it is a comparison between two things, and you choose one out of those. And by doing that, you're voting for something and against something. And the thing is, like, I know that it can feel good to present someone else's voting behavior as being this emotional reaction, that it's just fear. But I would say that for many of these people who would vote against Trump, no matter who the candidate was, first of all, they're allowed to be afraid. His policies are devastating. But really, like, that's sort of just a convenient out to say that they're just having an emotional reaction. What if they've been watching for 4 years and they oppose his policies? Can't they vote against that and not have it denigrated as an emotional thing? And I know if we're going to have this thing out there, too, that's, you know, don't voter shame. That is a form of voter shaming to say you shouldn't vote based on fear.
It's such an insane. I mean, I'm sorry to call everybody out, but like,
well, I would say with all due respect, but yeah,
I'd say with all due respect, it's such an insane privileged position to be like, but how do I feel about this? Like, where, like, right now we're saving America from the end of America. And that should be the priority. And that should be the unifier. And we've done that in the past. Like, America has come together in the past to, like, you know, avert existential crises. It is such a privileged position to then do, like, the postmodern meta, like, looking back on who I am when I cast my vote. How do I view myself? Like, cool, cool feeling if you can swing it. If you're insulated enough from the very real consequences that are befalling America, like, cool for you, but get over it. And that's not a nice way to put it. And I'm being an analyst and not a cheerleader right now. Like, it is an insane privileged position to be in, I think, in my opinion.
Well, I'm very much understanding.
I always take positions like this, and someone says like one very real thing, and I go, oh my God, I'm such a b-hole, but I don't see it right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, people vote for a lot of different reasons. And I think that we can try to understand it, or we can just sort of pitch it as something that's less awesome and intellectual and pure than the way we think about things. People are responding to their lives. That's what they're doing. Yeah. And this is the nominee we have. Yeah. Joe Biden decided to go into the lion's den by airing a new ad on Fox and Friends so that Trump supporters could actually watch it. Now, we're going to show you this ad, and we're also going to show you the context that it was run on Fox and Friends. It's a very powerful, very sad ad. And then they immediately go back into the show, and I want you to stick around for the end of the video to see how the transition back to Fox and Friends was handled.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
She was the most welcoming person you could ever imagine. Her home was the safe place. It was difficult to comprehend how quickly everything kind of spiraled downwards. We didn't even know that she had COVID till a week later in her passing. The president made a huge mistake in downplaying this virus. There was a lack of leadership, a lack of responsibility, and the lack of resources. I felt like our elderly have not been a priority for this administration, that they don't matter. And I feel like my grandmother didn't matter. The last time I saw my grandmother, we weren't going to be allowed in the hospital. We asked if we could video chat her and everyone could say a little something. We gathered as a family, we prayed. But the fact that she was alone, it just breaks my heart.
We are family. Okay. So I did it. We can't, John. You can't.
We can't. Okay, so look.
I saw it.
Yes,
I
they came back with We Are Family playing.
Are family. Get up, everybody. Get up, everybody.
I should have thought that. You'd get a strike. I get that. Anyway, they came back to the actual music.
Pre-lap and post, John. Don't worry about it.
Anyway.
We're family. We take care of each other.
Yeah, so after that devastating ad about the damage that has been done to countless thousands of American families, they came back with We Are Family. Now, look, I guess in their defense, it is unlikely that they knew exactly which ad break it would be in, I think. So I doubt it was intentional.
No,
certainly doesn't look good for the president, and that ad was devastating. And the thing is, look, I don't, like, to some extent, some people might think it's, you know, exploitative or something like that. But you could literally make 100 ads like that every day between now and the election, and everyone would be just as devastating, just as honest, and probably just as necessary to get people to realize that although many people have skated through the pandemic without, you know, getting sick, without dying, lots haven't. And I think it's been too easy for people to forget about that. I see it all the time when I walk around my neighborhood and I see people without masks. I go to the park. And literally almost nobody has masks. There's been so many people who moved on from this thing, but a lot of people aren't going to be able to.
Dude, it's so nuts. I go to the beach and see thousands of people just not care. Like, big bonfires, people gathered. No one, like, a large portion of people don't care. And it's so frustrating. It is wildly frustrating. All of it is frustrating. Every aspect of it. Because I talk to people who are like, listen, it's just like the flu. They're still saying that. That is an insane statement because an average flu year, like a middling flu year, is what, like 35,000 to 45,000 deaths?
That's what they were saying in the beginning. Yeah. It's not the flu. The flu kills 35,000.
And during the flu, like, yes, that happens. We have a flu shot. So we've done all we can, and this we don't, and we've shut everything down, and it's still at 170,000 deaths. Yeah. Anything past that, if you're still arguing, you're just trying to go back to some kind of normal, and I do understand that, but it is not normal. This is a weird, crazy time. We have to make these decisions and be these. And then I have people that I follow on Instagram all over the world, and they're back to normal. Like, a lot of them are back to normal.
They're at the
fine.
Beach and yeah.
And we don't have that luxury because we thought we were living this luxury because we thought we had the luxury.
Yeah. And we could have, you know, there are major countries that, you know, we talked about yesterday on the show. There are European countries that have logged days with zero deaths. And we're bigger than them, sure. So maybe we wouldn't have zero. But it could be 50 or 100. It could easily have been 100. But unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, I think the single largest reason is complete lack of interest in protecting us on the behalf of the government. And that's, you know, mostly Trump, but not just Trump and not just Republicans. We're not going to do that. And then you combine it with all of the particular personality characteristics of your average American. And I have come to the realization, and I'm sure many of you have as well, that we will not be safe from this until a rock solid vaccine is made available. There is just not in America, not going to be safe, because we are not going to take it seriously. The government's not going to take it seriously. And if they're not going to, we're certainly not going to step in and do it for them. But anyway.
I want to say, that ad notwithstanding, watching Fox and Friends or any morning news show is that experience anyway. They're all victims in recipes. Like, that's the Today Show. That's Good Morning America. They're all like, and you watch like them go. And 40 people were murdered by bees. Coming up, how's your barbecue going to be with this new melon baller technology?
Yeah.
You're just like, what? That's the usual. I feel crazy while watching that show.
Yeah.
But there should be some sense of responsibility that Fox and Friends feels when it's not the happenstance coming back from a sad commercial. Within their own show, they still do that. They're still saying hydroxychloroquine's cool. They're denying the fact that Trump said, they're trying to move on and hide the fact that Trump said, you know, when left his own devices, inject yourself with demon semen or whatever.
Yeah. And that kids, like, shocked that kids can get it. Like, last week, shocked that kids could get it. That might have been Monday this week, actually. Yeah, exactly. And the thing about the flu, too, I just want to mention, I try to remind people of this, as I did at the beginning when those comparisons were being made, when it was like, well, you know, only 500 people have died from COVID. The flu killed 60,000. I want to remind people, we're in a COVID pandemic. The flu still happens. It's not like you trade it for COVID. It's still all the, you can still slip off a ladder and die. All of the normal things that can kill you can still kill you. This is extra stuff. That's what makes it so bad. And also, as someone pointed out in the chat, generally, once you've survived the flu, you're not necessarily suffering lifelong lung damage, heart damage, other organ damage. It doesn't cause something similar to Kawasaki syndrome in kids. There are other issues, even if you survive this virus, that are not necessarily the case with the flu. It's just such a stupid comparison in literally every way that it could be. Ed Markey is fast approaching the big primary with Kennedy. A needless primary where Kennedy, in pursuit of his own political ambitions, is deciding to take down Ed Markey, even though he's one of the better senators. In fact, on the issue of climate change, one of the best senators we have. Well, Markey's got a new ad. It's a three-minute ad. You can see the full thing online. I just want to show you a section of it because it's powerful. And make sure you watch the last few seconds of it because there's an interesting little historical dig there.
There's an invisible contract we all signed at birth, a promise. Every hour we work means longer days of freedom and security. It paved the road in your neighborhoods, and it added up to a country. But when crisis hit, Trump's government abandoned America. We asked what we could do for our country. They looked for what they could take. But there's a truth written in every history book. If you break the sacred contract, the people make a revolution. All across America, the essential people are demanding a new deal.
Well, they call me the deal maker.
I put the deal on the table, but the people make it impossible to refuse. With 500 laws on the books, you think I'm going to stop now? They wish.
Green New Deal.
Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey introduced their Green New Deal.
Stop climate change and create millions of good jobs in the process.
We got to absolutely crush Donald Trump in November. But if we're going to end this era of chaos, that won't be enough. We got to make sure President Biden signs the Green New Deal. We can't wait.
We got to have folks in the United States Senate who are willing to stand up for working people. That's who Ed Markey is. I need Ed Markey in the United States Senate.
We asked what we could do for our country. We went out. We did it. With all due respect, it's time to start asking what your country can do for you.
That's pretty good. What do you think, Brett?
I like it. Battlestar Galactica references notwithstanding, right? Or is that all along the Watchtower?
All along the Watchtower.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Anyways, I love it. It was.
Yeah, Old Town Road in a Markey ad. That just seems a little bit weird. But yeah, it was the early part. No, it was powerful. And the full ad is like twice as long. You should definitely watch it. You know, we can't show you a 3-minute ad, basically. But Yeah, no, it's got a good stuff about his record. It shows that he understands, you know, what's happening in the country, where the country is going, what needs to happen. He put the need to pass the Green New Deal front and center. He said in his ad, while presenting himself as, you know, this obvious alternative to Kennedy, he also says, I'm going to challenge Biden. It's not just I'm going to do whatever Biden wants. Our only problem is Trump. So I love that. And then at the end, the little dig at JFK is obviously, you know, that's...
Well, it's not a dig at JFK.
It's not a dig, but it's a response.
It's a dig at JK3.
Yeah.
Because
sure.
He's running against Joe's grandson? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a dig, but I like it as a little moment.
It's absolutely... John, that is absolutely an attack on JK3. That is what it is. It is 100% listen. What we have here is a legacy Kennedy, by all accounts, D-bag, who's running for this seat. Why? Because he thinks he was born to be in that seat. Why? Because of Camelot. Camelot is a British royal trope that we need to get away from. You need to earn things in America by your accomplishments. That is the only thing this ad is about. This ad is just about, it is, we're not going to put a Kennedy, we could put a Kennedy there if he earns it, but we're not going to put a Kennedy in my seat unless he earns it. And you know what's so sad about America, the sad truths, is that name recognition is 9/10 of the law of elections. People know the Kennedy names. And we all know that his twin brother, Matty Kennedy, is a much more fun person.
Yeah, it's possessing that name is 9/10 of winning the election, I guess. Now, the issue is that, like, how could he not have known that a lot of people are going to see this race, this challenge against Ed Markey, who's, you know, he's one of the good ones, one of the better ones, would be like, what? So why? Why are you challenging him other than political opportunism and ambition? And I haven't heard an answer that I buy as to why now, why this race, why take out Markey. And it seems like it might be hurting him. So in a new poll, Markey leads Kennedy among Democratic and Democratic leading voters, 51% to 36% in the poll, with 12% undecided. That's much closer than the same poll back in February where Markey was only up 3. And I saw a few polls where Kennedy was actually up by a little bit. It seems like, at least according to this poll, that things have moved much more in the direction of Markey, probably because
you said it was closer now, but you meant it's not.
I meant it was closer before. Yeah. And so now he's up by a good bit. And I think that that's partially the endorsements he's gotten, the institutional support from things like the Sunrise Movement. And that ad's certainly not going to hurt, I would guess.
And it's good because I understand the instinct for a lot of American moderate Democratic voters, which is like, I know what's going on. And of course, you know what's going on. You've lived in America. You've made it. You've gotten by and you know stuff about, you've paid attention to politics. And what's good about ads like this from Markey is, and that's the job of political advertising, is to let you know, frame things in a way that you could potentially see and say, actually, you're right. And I think what happens so often is you'll just see a Kennedy and you'll say, I guess I got to do this. We had Teddy and now we got, you know, his nephew, his grandnephew coming up. Why not? And I think Markey has done a good job of fending off the challenger. And I mean, so. I've met Joe and I was in a frat with his brother, but like, I much prefer Markey in these situations.
You met Joe? Interesting. I don't know that.
JK, this Joe, yeah. He was an SAE, much, much frattier than ours. Matty was fun, man. Matty Kennedy's, he's a Kennedy. They kept coming back from ski trips with like broken legs and stuff. And you're like, you got to stop it. You got to stop skiing.
Yeah, but you're going to kill yourself.
Fun, crazy guy.
God, the frat talk. One more video I want to show you. This is from the most recent debate between Markey and Kennedy, where they had a little interaction over basically super PAC support for negative ads against Markey. And it's just fun. Let's take a look.
This ad's coming in. He says, I have no idea if my father, he's saying, I have no idea if my father is providing the funding for all of these negative ads that are being run, because they should be positive. Any super PAC for me should be positive. Any super PAC for him. So here's what I would say to the congressman. I'm sure your father's watching right now. Tell your father right now that you don't want money to go into a super PAC that runs negative ads. And just tell your twin brother and tell your father you don't want any money to be spent on negative ads in Massachusetts in 2020 in the era of Donald Trump.
Senator, let him respond. I've said that multiple times.
Have you told your father that?
I've said that publicly multiple times.
Have you said it to your father?
Publicly.
Have you said it to your father?
Publicly, Senator.
Tell your father you don't want the money to be spent on negative ads.
Tell your father. Tell your father.
You gotta love it. I knew Brett would love that. You sound my father ever tells me. It's so weird.
Don't you talk about my father.
I'm just picturing drunk Matty Kennedy in the I can't. I'm too close to this one, John. I can't.
I thought this would be like the opportunity of a lifetime for you. You get to do the accent if you want.
I know. I just really like Matty Kennedy. He's so fun.
Yeah,
I don't know
what
Kennedys
to say. Were okay.
I love it. I like it's just God, it's a little out of body right now. But looking at that interaction, Markey's, I mean, if I'm just analyzing the performance in the debate, that is a perfect performance from Markey. Just looking and saying, bringing up all these things that you know about Kennedys, the things that I said earlier, you just assume if you're just a generic voter, you're like, all right, the Kennedys, they took care of us for a long time. I'm gonna take care of them back. But then to say, oh my God, his dad, and there's another one?
Tell you about his father.
Let me tell you back when we went to Hyannis Pot.
So hold on, there was a comment I want to read. It was, where is it? Kenny from Philly's like, OMG, Goodwill Hunting goes to Washington.
It's not your fault, Joe. It's not your fault.
Yeah, you know, I want a headline in 2 weeks after the primary, the next morning, how you like them apples.
You tell your father and your twin brothers, Bobby, Timmy, Ricky, Donnie, Billy, Kimmy, Toppy, Poppy, and Bo.
Wait, there was a little bit of Ted there. I don't know if you remember
Ted's
that
more
part.
Like this. Ted was more like this.
I mean, when he was reading off all the women, the most common names. Anyway, yeah, no, look, it's a funny video, obviously, but Markey has to crush him. Like, again, we're not against primary challenges. You get to challenge someone, you have to make the case for why you're challenging them, though. It's not just like, I live here and you're in my way. And, oh, and by the way, I never need to prove myself. I don't have to actually do anything because of the name that I was born into. No, you have to actually make the case. If you're going to be better on these issues, and he's trying to present himself as a progressive, by the way, if you're better than Markey, then show us why. Because I got news for you. Sunrise Movement, yeah, they like Markey. You know, Markey was involved in, like, initially sponsoring the Green New Deal. But if he was better than Markey on that, you might have a chance of swaying the Sunrise Movement and other activists to your cause. He hasn't been able to do that, and I would argue he's barely tried. He really does think, I'm going to flood this thing with money, and I'm going to use my name, and that's all it takes. But Markey, he's a much bigger name than he was a few years ago, again, for the best possible reason, because he gets the challenges we're facing, and he's putting forward actual solutions to them.
Well, I would just say, better is your definition, and for just to take you inside the mind of a political operative who is trying to message for their candidate going into an election where they have elected Republicans in Massachusetts, they get really frustrated with primary voters, And a lot of them are like, I don't care about the Sunrise Movement. And some of them can get away with not caring about the Sunrise Movement. Mm-hmm. But key to that is to avoid, if you're JK3's, advisor, is to help him avoid moments like that, where they remind folks that, you know, Markey's been doing a good job of reminding people that, like, I am looking out to make jobs for people in ways that help America and the planet. And also, I did it myself, and I didn't need my dad to run negative ads.
Yeah. Yeah, needing help from your dad to win an election. Like, if it wasn't already clear that this is like, I'm just going to be given something, the fact that, like, your father is helping give it to you, I don't know. Like, and, you know, after all the experience of Donald Trump, I think we want that even less than usual. We're in the middle of a big tech battle royale, and it all started after Epic Games announced this morning that it was encouraging, this is yesterday, that is encouraging Fortnite players to bypass Apple's in-house payment system at a 20% discount. So they make Fortnite, you can buy the in-game currency. Normally you pay through Apple and they take a cut, but Epic wanted to do it themselves and offer it at a cheaper rate. Now that's an intentional violation of Apple's app policies. And in response to that, Apple has removed Fortnite from its app store, claiming that Epic wanted a special arrangement that other developers don't get. That means that if you've already downloaded Fortnite, as many people have, 250 million people have played it. If you've already downloaded it to your iPhone or iPad, you can still use it. But it means that Epic won't be able to update the app. And so potentially a large number of users could get taken away. So that was the first volley in this battle royale. The second was that Fortnite also was then kicked off of the Google Play Store for Android. Nintendo, we're looking at you. Don't make any sudden movements. And so in response to that, Fortnite has put out an awesome ad. If you've played Fortnite, you know that they've got some good people with the animations and stuff. So take a look at this ad, see if it reminds you of anything, where they break down the situation.
Today, we celebrate the anniversary of the Platform Unification Directives. For years, they have given us their songs, their labor, their dreams. In exchange, we have taken our tribute, our profits, our control.
So that's obviously a reference to the classic Apple ad. I think we have that we can put up as B-roll as we continue to talk. But Brett, this back and forth, who do you see coming out on top in this?
I see Apple coming out on top.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Just because they're the platform holder?
Yeah. Basically, what they're arguing against, as I understand it, and correct me if you read it a different way, is that they're frustrated that Apple is the one who is able to say, listen, I've made this platform where commerce happens and I need to wet my beak. But instead of just wetting the tip of their beak, they're taking like 30% of all the take.
Yeah.
And this is Fortnite saying, by the way, I'm the biggest game in town. So why don't you give me most favored nation status at the very least? And maybe you could also, give them the benefit of the doubt, lower the amount that you're taking from other app developers and other people who are placed on the same commerce platform. And they're trying to throw their weight around because the ability to sell, to have the game on the platforms of Android and iPhone, iOS came much later than the one they made all their money on at the beginning, which was PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Thank you for acknowledging that PCs exist. Because I think that's
what I'm on one anyway. From Artesian.
Yeah, you are. So look, some people are saying they agree to the terms. Yeah, and I get that, but they had to. I think they can challenge it at some point. And look, the reason I pitched this initially as a big tech battle royale is because, look, if you're not interested in Fortnite, as the vast majority of you probably are not, this is still about the ability of companies like Google and Apple to determine the playing field, what they're going to be paid. And if you don't pay that, then what are you putting your game on the Windows phone? Like, yeah, you kind of have to. It's like Amazon. They become so big that at some point you kind of have to go along with it. The question, and again, Epic is not some small little poor indie developer. They've pulled in billions and billions and billions of dollars. That's what's at stake. The question is, does Apple, by having the platform and allowing Epic to, like, you know, host the game there and update the game there, do they deserve hundreds of millions of dollars for that? I guess that's the question. At what point, like, I understand you're going to take a percentage because you can't charge some indie new developer $100 million, but shouldn't there be some sort of cap? Like, you didn't make the game. You're not updating the game. You have a platform. And so these are questions that are going to have to eventually be worked out in court, because Epic, in response to Apple's response, says it's filing an antitrust lawsuit against Apple in U.S. District Court. It's also telling its Apple users they won't be able to play future versions of its game, quote, because Apple has blocked your ability to update. When Fortnite Chapter 2 Season 4 releases, you will not be able to play the new season on iOS. And they're hoping, and it's very clear in that ad, that if one platform doesn't have Fortnite, that could influence consumer behavior. Not necessarily immediately, but in the future, it potentially could. It wouldn't affect me, because I think playing on mobile is a terrible experience. I don't see why anyone would do that. But I get
it's
that some people will.
It's all bots.
It's all bots. And I've you can't really control it. The issue for that strategy, though, is that now Google has also thrown them off the Play Store for Android. Google, theoretically, could have provided sort of a competitive advantage to themselves by being the platform that still has Fortnite. But the thing is, they also want control over the percentage of the in-app purchases they're getting. So it's really, it's just fire going in all directions here.
Yeah, this is when you look around. And it's great, just kick the tires, see what's happening. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what it's like? It's like when you throw, when, I guess, Indiana Jones, like, puts in Raiders, he, like, puts his, like, torch stick into the light beam, and it immediately gets hit with a dart. That's mm-hmm. what Fortnite's doing. They're just like, boom, and it just all gets hit. And they're still safe, because they have, I don't know what the breakdown is. And then also, like, they do make a lot of money off of just random stuff you can buy, but there is a way. I think it's a genius move for them not to update it if you're Apple trying to be terrible, and Google trying to, quote, be evil, because that's what they're doing. You're just blocking the next season, because Fortnite makes it very easy for you to, if you play enough, get, like, the cool extras from the game, like, enough cool extras from the game just by playing enough and leveling up and getting free V-Bucks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, although I guess we won't. It'll be behind closed doors. Who is going to really lose more out of this if this stretches to a week, a month, a year? And how does that influence? How long will they hold out if hundreds of millions or billions of dollars are potentially on the line? I don't even know what percentage of the player base is on mobile or makes their purchases on mobile, because couldn't you conceivably make the purchases on your PC, for instance, and then use the currency on mobile? It's a complicated world we live in. And the thing is, it's not like Apple can just be like, well, they already purchased the game, so they're not going to go purchase it somewhere else. It's free. So yeah, there's a lot of what makes modern gaming and tech what it is all being combined into this battle. And that's why I think that this is an interesting thing to keep an eye on, even if you don't care at all about Fortnite or gaming at all. This affects all sorts of apps, theoretically.
I also love that the hashtag, the, like, small hypocrisy is, it's hashtag free Fortnite, but it's all about how you can pay for Fortnite.
Totally. And how they'll make more money when they are making all the money. Yeah. There's no total good guy here.
Yeah.
Although Fortnite makes the ads that will probably be best in this back and forth. We'll see if Apple comes out with one.
I mean, it's insane for you to say that Apple doesn't make iconic ads when the ad that Fortnite made is based on an iconic Apple ad.
Yeah, true. And that ad came out like 7 years before I was born. I'm just putting that out there to confuse people.
That's insane, John.
But anyway, yes, it was an iconic ad, but what have you done for me lately? They had some good ads like 15 years ago, too. What's been going on lately? I don't know. I don't have TV. I don't watch commercials, so I don't know. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so it's time for garbage, people. So why don't we talk about my garbage person first, because that's what we're going to do. Okay, so my garbage person of the week is someone who isn't generally my garbage person, but I think that they deserve it this time. It is one president of these United States, Donald J. Trump, for a particular reason. And I want to show you what that reason is. He's been doing his press conferences recently. Here's a question that he fielded. Take a look at this.
I have two questions. The first one on domestic politics. There are claims.
Can't understand a word you're saying.
There are claims circulating in social media that Kamala Harris is not eligible to run for vice president because she was an anchor baby, I quote. Do you or can you definitively say whether or not Kamala Harris is eligible, meets the legal requirements to run as vice president?
So I just heard that. I heard it today that she doesn't meet the requirements. And by the way, the lawyer that wrote that piece is a very highly qualified, very talented lawyer. I have no idea if that's right. I would have assumed the Democrats would have checked that out before she gets chosen to run for vice president. But that's a very serious. You're saying that they're saying that she doesn't qualify because she wasn't born in this country.
Okay, so I obviously hate that answer. I hate that it took, like, 72 hours for us to launch back into birtherism and all that. But I would also say, as much as I hate the answer, also hate the question. Why are you pitching it as being up to him whether she is eligible or not? I don't know who the questioner was. No, she is eligible, as we'll get to. You don't set it up as a thing that he gets to decide. And by the way, he used that because the last thing he said in that video was, oh, so you said she's not eligible. And I don't know. I'm not saying anything. I'm not making claims. I'm just saying some guy said it and, we don't know. And the Democrats really should have checked it out. Apparently they didn't. So I guess she's not eligible. In that, he appeared to be referring to a widely discredited op-ed article published in Newsweek, by the way, the new Newsweek, by John C. Eastman, a conservative lawyer who's long argued that the U.S. Constitution does not grant birthright citizenship. It's an interesting idea. That's also not true. It's ridiculous. And just because he happened to have gone to law school at some point in the past doesn't make it any more true, as well as anything related to it, such as whether Kamala Harris is eligible to be VP. It's not just Trump, by the way. You also have Jenna Ellis, one of his advisors, retweeted Tom Fitton saying, well, we're just asking questions. We don't know.
So
no,
stupid.
But we do know, though, because under the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Senator Harris was born to immigrant parents in Oakland, California. That fact alone makes her a natural-born citizen and thus eligible to serve as either president or vice president, regardless of what Jenna Ellis or Tom Fitton or some discredited lawyer or Donald Trump think about it. It is as simple as that.
And so, in the tournament to become Attorney General of California, this guy, John C. Eastman, was eliminated in the semis. He ran to be Attorney General and lost in the primary that led to the election that Kamala Harris ended up winning. This guy is Captain Sour Grapes. This guy also wrote an op-ed about how, Ted Cruz was born in Canada as his parents were voting in Canada. And it's very obvious that that guy can be president.
Yeah.
The Republicans are the worst at this because let's just go through the list of Republican primary candidates who were born in other countries. John McCain was born in Panama. Mitt Romney's dad was born in Mormon colonies in Mexico, and he ran for president, was in debates and everything. And, it is insane to me that these guys, it is an insane thing to do. It is not based in reality. It is exactly the thousand-hand slap of Donald Trump, where it's just like, I'm going to say anything, and I'm going to say a thousand dumb ideas that will just muddy the waters and you will not be able to focus on anyone. And it's also so lazy. It's just like, what's that bag that I have? Let's just do birtherism. She's brown.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And we'll remind people back in 2012, he tweeted, an extremely credible source has called my office and told me that Barack Obama's birth certificate is a fraud. We don't know for sure if that was John C. Eastman, who was that incredibly credible source, but never turned up anyway.
That was pre-rando capitalization Donald Trump.
Exactly. That's true. He got that at some point. And so she's
he abandoned the shift key altogether because his apostrophe. He uses apostrophes.
Exactly.
Auto-caps and apostrophes. What a turd.
And so someone in the chat was like, Trump is forcing John to defend Kamala. No, but see, that's the thing. You defend or don't defend based on the substance. She gets to be VP. I don't necessarily prefer her over other people, but that's for other reasons that have nothing to do with birtherism. That's all policy.
I like the choice of Kamala for this reason. I mean, isn't my favorite choice. I'm the same as you. But I like the thing because Trump is so triggered by Kamala Harris as the nominee because she's good TV. Mm-hmm. He's doubtless she's a hottie. And also, she keeps it together in a very specific television way. She's, she's not the Law and Order candidate. She's not just the Law and Order candidate. She's the Law and Order, the TV show candidate. She's Law and Order DC. She's going to cross examine the guy and just sit there and do it in a way that people at home watching appreciate the performance of on a subconscious level, as they did during the Kavanaugh hearings and as they did when she went after Biden during the debates.
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to sort of quickly sum up the week, because the thing is, you know what the Democrats do? The Democrats always just label people racist when they're not, and they just do it to disqualify them. They just do it no matter what. Why are they freaking out? I mean, they only spent the first 3 days of Kamala Harris's the VP pick, I should say the right did, saying that she was mean and angry and now also not qualified, as every person who is one shade darker than eggshell white will be smeared for the rest of their lives. It doesn't matter. And the thing is, you brought up the Mitt Romney's dad and the John McCain thing. And yes, to some extent, controversy was raised about that. And it's ridiculous because they're allowed to run if they want to run. But the thing is that John McCain faced what percentage what Obama did? A tiny little bit. I saw one or two people talking about Ted Cruz even back during that. But it's a tiny little bit. This is opportunistic racism because they know what their base wants. Their base wants to believe that it is constitutionally impossible for any non-white person to become president, and this is a convenient way to believe that. There will always be some theory about where they were really born or where their parents are really born or who is an immigrant or whether it counts or anything like that. Because she happens to be black, she's going to be a mean, angry person who's not allowed to be in the position she's going for. That's all it is. And that's what the election is going to be. There's plenty of things they could criticize her on in policy. They're not going to do that. They're just going to use misogyny and racism. And we get to call it out because that's what it is.
My favorite tweet about calling Kamala Harris angry, which she's not. She is just like every other politician in that she's ambitious and she does whatever it takes to get to the next level. They all do. But when they said
man or woman, they all do.
Man or woman. Man, definitely. Like, are you kidding me? Look at every Republican senator right now doing anything they can to keep their seat.
Well, and look at Joe Kennedy, our criticism of him earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same criticism.
I am saying that she is a politician. Okay. She is that politician. She doesn't make rich people angry. She knows how to isolate her donors from criticism or insulate her donors from criticism, all of that. But the idea that you're going to call her angry, my favorite tweet about it, there were two. There was one about the Kavanaugh hearing, and they said, here's how I remember that. And it was a photo of Kamala like this.
Mm-hmm.
Very calm. And Kavanaugh, like, oh, he's like, oh, this is horrible. God, I like beers with spleen.
I like beer. I like beer.
He was a little whiny brat, you know? Okay, so there's that. And the second one was the only angry woman I saw at the, and this is sexist and terrible, but the only angry, crying woman I saw at the Kavanaugh hearings was Lindsey Graham.
Okay.
And they had the angry, just like,
he freaked out. He really did freak out. God.
In a context of going after people based on how they frame things and tropes and the kind of folks they are to get under their skin, I liked that response tweet about Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. So, what about you, Brett?
Mine is an oldie but a goodie, and I know we're not going to cover it on main show, so I wanted to get it in here. Alex P. Jones, I don't know what his middle one is, but Alex Jones, pretend there's a photo on my phone, I didn't prepare, is a garbage person. I was wondering where he was because I thought something about being found guilty of doxing victims of child shootings. But no, he went to John's old stomping grounds in Austin, Texas, to try to get into the Barton Creek Greenbelt. And his wife did, and she was turned back because she didn't have a reservation. Do not cross. Do not cross Alex Jones. Here he is.
Well, the past, I've been coming here since I was in high school and college, and now you guys use your COVID hoax to, like, set a checkpoint up so you can take over the parks and start charging? It's unconstitutional. This is not even a city ordinance. This is a illegal power grab of the people's greenbelt, and it's time to free Austin. So are you guys volunteers for City Austin? Who are you, masked man?
I'm a lifeguard for Barton Springs.
You're a lifeguard for Barton Springs, now part of the criminal power grab.
I'm a lifeguard?
I'm a lifeguard. No, who are running? You, dude?
No, my job is to say no running. So, and I love that.
My job is to say no running.
Like, I love it. Alex Jones. It's like, when I like picture his day. He's like, nobody listen to me. I keep getting in trouble because I keep telling people where families of child shootings live. And it's not easy. And his wife is like, oh, God, I tried to get out of the house to dodge time with you for a while. He's like, why are you back so early? And she says, I couldn't go to, don't worry, it's just the creek. And he's like, oh, a thing to do? Where's my comically tiny megaphone?
And then he
continues with his comically tiny megaphone. Watch.
This is outrageous criminal activity. This is the seizure of the infrastructure of Austin. It is all color of law garbage. My wife came here this morning when you cult member Kooks showed up here. And you ask her, where's her reservation? Her reservation is that we live in a free country. We live in America. I call for everybody out there watching. The time for civil disobedience is here. I want this removed tonight. COVID-19 is a power grab hoax.
At that point, like, a guy walks in front and flips off the camera.
Yeah, by the way, Barton Springs is awesome. It's one of the things I miss most about Austin. It is critical infrastructure, though, so how dare they seize it? So the bad, serious thing is that he is hoping that his crazed followers will go there, and then God knows what happens. And so I'm worried for the lifeguards there that he's now making it a target. But also, let's bear in mind, maybe he doesn't have as much influence as he used to, because he's just, like, talking to people who don't even care that he's talking to them. Like, how diminished is Alex Jones? They're not interested. But then really fast, so you mentioned that the fact that his megaphone is comically small. A few other things I noticed about his megaphone. One, that he's using a megaphone. Everyone's right near you, dude. Just talk. And then two, when he uses the megaphone, somehow his voice doesn't get any louder. It's like, yeah, he already is a megaphone. It isn't amplified through the technology.
It's all it is distorted. Like, it's everything distorted else coming out of his mouth.
And he said it's a hoax, by the way.
I love it's that still haircut. A hoax.
Yeah.
There's so much great happening with Alex Jones. Like, his attempt to be like, there's a jawline. My head is not just a beach ball with a face painted on it.
God, what? He is, like, the worst thing about Austin is that the highways are too small. The second worst thing about Austin is Alex Jones. It really stinks.
So just about the facts, he's like, you can't tell people to come here by a reservation. Yes, you can. Essentially, Amanda Ross, Natural Resources Division Manager at Austin Parks, said a city ordinance gives the department the authority to manage public lands with a reservation system or limit access. So yeah, that is a city ordinance. It is real. And I love the guy who's like, I'm a lifeguard. I sadly know who you are. And yeah, I'm not mad at it. I'm just like, now there's something to do here besides say, do you have a reservation?
Exactly.
So good.
Yeah, what a sad. You know what? And I know that some people used to watch him just for fun. It's not fun anymore. He's just kind of a pathetic parody of himself. Just go on YouTube and just search Tuck Buckford. It's the same thing, but more fun. It's actually funny. And nobody gets doxxed. Okay, Brett, really fast, I just need to mention who the community garbage person of the week is over at the community tab. Every Thursday, we post the top four suggestions so that you all can vote. 16,000 of you did yesterday, and with 76% of the vote, that's about the highest I've ever seen, Trump's Postmaster General for sabotaging the Postal Service. That is a very good pick. I definitely support that. Next, we have anti-maskers for harassing essential workers. That's 11%, and technically that's crossover with Brett. And 7%, Ben Shapiro for subjecting us to a swap performance. And 6%, the bikers in Sturgis for flooding the city during a pandemic. So four good choices there, but a runaway winner. So thank you to everybody who voted in that and made those suggestions. Brett, as always, thank you so much for joining us. It's great.
Thank
you.
And thanks to Norma for making the emotes and everybody for using them. And Ike Dar for the gifted subs and all you folks. Watch Happy Half Hour tonight. My wife, the Brooke Marks, is on it. And awesome. Then later after that, as we said, but our mics were off before the show started, obviously, Common Room tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Myself, Bree Esrig from the old Pop Trigger days and SourceFed and all that. And then Ellery Smith, great comedian. And then Smaestron from Twitch will be on, and you're going to love it.
Nice. Sounds like fun. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
The past few months have not been kind to American workers, and that's even in comparison to the normally poor treatment they've received from America over the entire time that we've been a country. But there are opportunities on the horizon, and so I'm very excited to welcome to the show for the first time the founder and president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation, co-founder of the United Farm Workers, labor leader, and civil rights activist, Dolores Huerta. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hello, nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. There's a lot that I'm hoping we'll get an opportunity to talk about. But before we launch into some of, you know, what might be possible in the near future, there's a few recent developments that I would love to get your perspective on. Starting with the fact that the Senate negotiations to provide aid to those who have been unemployed, workers who are incredibly uncertain about the state of the economy, those who are being afflicted by the pandemic, they've now gone on recess for 3 weeks, and so no deal was reached, no aid is coming. What do you think about the way that the American workers and those who've been recently unemployed have been treated by the government during this pandemic?
Well, you might say the American workers and the American people, this is so heartless of them to do this. We know that unemployment insurance ran out for people over a week ago. And how are these families going to pay the rent? How are they going to get food? I mean, this is so heartless. And this definitely calls for some kind of a voting revolt, you might say, so that people can really throw these people out of office, those that are responsible, to bring this much suffering on the American public, on families, on children. I mean, this is unconscionable, unconscionable.
You know, and I have to say that while I don't have very high expectations for what the government is going to provide to workers, the idea that they passed effectively one bill at the beginning of this whole experience, and really there's been nothing since then. And since that first bill, over 100,000 additional workers have died, tens of millions have lost their jobs. It's surprising the extent to which they seem to feel that there isn't going to, you mentioned a revolt of voting. They don't seem to be afraid of that. It's as if they believe that the American people aren't going to respond in a negative way to the way that they've been treated.
Yeah, I think when you use the word government, you've got to be more specific, because we do know that the House of Representatives, under the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, passed a $3 trillion bill called the HEROES Act. And included in that, there was, of course, all kinds of assistance, hazard pay for essential workers, which included farm workers, some type of relief for local governments, also money for education, all of the things, including some type of relief also for, we know, many rural areas in our country. They don't have the broadband that they need. Everything that we need in our country right now, and maybe not a permanent fix, but definitely a fix to get us through this pandemic. And $600 a week for people so that they could buy food and put some money on the rent, because sometimes we know that doesn't even cover their entire rent that they have. But some kind of relief, and to see that the Senate, the Republican leadership of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, you know, and the people that are with him would just do this. And I mean, I think, you know, we've seen all of these protests on the street, and my gosh, if we ever need something to be a march on Washington is right now. And we know we can't do that because, you know, with the pandemic, we have to be socially distanced. We don't want people to gather together. But I think this is an outrage, and people should be totally outraged. And unfortunately, a lot of people, they don't really, like you said, when you opened up, you said the government, a lot of people think, oh, it's the government. They don't realize, oh, it's the Senate of the United States of America, and it's led by this one Senate Republican, Mitch McConnell, and his cronies that are doing this. So again, you know, when they tried to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, you had people that were storming the offices of the different legislators to say, no, we don't want you to get rid of this little Affordable Care Act that we have. you know, the first time that really people had some way to get some kind of health insurance, and they had it back down. So I think it's kind of time that we do that again, that we just go to these senators' offices, the Republican senators, and if we have to picket in front of those, or do, and definitely can, one thing that we can do, we all have cell phones, and a lot of us have computers, and just storm them with emails right now and say, what are you doing? This is like, if you're in a war, and you have soldiers that abandon their posts, their military posts, you know, this is what this is they're going AWOL. They're going AWOL. They were abandoning their duties that they were elected for, and unconscionable.
I think it's a very fair point. I would say that, you know, Mitch McConnell deserves the lion's share of the blame specifically. And you know, in terms of, I agree with you that I think that people have to show their opposition to that. I think that there should be picketing, although as you say, you know, we have to bear in mind that it is a pandemic, so with social distancing and with masks and all of that. I think that there might be, and I'm interested in your opinion on this, there might be this belief that we're just about 3 weeks away or 3 months away from the election or so, a little bit less than that. And so that's an opportunity to show how people feel. But I know that a lot of people are worried that with this ongoing assault against the post office, that there's concerns about whether their vote will actually be heard. And this attack against the post office is really attack against the infrastructure and the workers. So again, that there's this labor angle that goes through the entirety of it, that postal workers are not being given the resources they need, and that might end up affecting the ability of the people to, you know, have their voices be heard in November.
Yeah, I think this is all a political ploy by President Trump. You know, he signed these executive orders, and he's saying they want to give people $400 a week, not $600 a week. He's going to take the money from FEMA. And here we have all of these hurricanes coming and these natural disasters, where again, where do we get the money for people when that happens? We get it from FEMA, because they're supposed to take care of the people that are the victims of natural disasters. And so I think that the president wants to put a spotlight on himself and think that somehow people are going to be grateful because they're going to get $400 a week, if that even happens, because we know that constitutionally he does not have that authority to do that, and to stop payroll deductions, which will of course hurt Social Security. And so all of these schemes that he wants to, I think, put the spotlight again on himself, so that somehow people will think that this president is bringing them some kind of relief right now while the Senate is out on vacation, really. And so I think this is just part of the political ploy. And then of course his attack on the post office is part of the same game plan. He's doing everything that he can to try to hamper the elections. I've heard this story by one of the postal masters in her office, and I can't remember which state it was, but they have actually removed equipment. Right now they have removed the equipment that they are going to need in order to be able to process the mail that they now have. And that's right now it's going to inhibit them in their current jobs of delivering the mail, instead of adding more equipment for the vote by mail, which we know is going to be part of the election on November 3rd.
Yeah, I am very worried about that. And it's not like, you know, before this period, it wasn't like the post office was just being showered with resources and help and manpower. They were already in a tough place, and now it's only gotten worse. Looking forward to the future, we now have our nominees for president and for vice president. I know that you were on the special on the Young Turks earlier this week talking about it was the immediate aftermath of Kamala Harris being chosen as the VP pick for Joe Biden. Now that we know that those are our two nominees, as someone who has spent the vast majority of your life advocating for American workers, what do you think about the prospects under a Biden-Harris administration for strengthening labor protections, labor rights, and all of that? How is that battle going to go over the next 4 years?
Well, I have a lot of hope, and that is because one thing about Joe Biden, he's always been on the side of American workers. And we know that the rights of workers have been really decreased. They've been made weaker. You know, workers, one good example of this is that workers at the state level and the national level have been asking for a long time for recognition, so that when workers are trying to get recognition at the workplace, that they can do this by simply signing a card to say, I want to be represented by X union. Okay, that has been turned down time and again, voted down. And you think about it, if your signature is good enough to get married, to own a car, to get a mortgage on your house, to get a divorce, you know, then that your signature should be good enough to say, I want my union to represent me. And the other big problem that unions have right now, they win elections, but they can never get a contract because the employers take them to court, they do all these stalling techniques. And so the protections of not only workers, but of labor unions have to be strengthened. And here, you know, we're talking about, okay, $15 an hour should be a minimum wage. And we know that in California, that isn't enough. In California, a minimum wage should be $30 an hour. And then it's pathetic when we think of many of the states in our country that the minimum wage is $7 an hour, really. While we have these corporations that are getting richer, I mean, multi-billionaires, and the way they treat their workers, people like Amazon, you know, they brag about how many electric cars they're going to buy and they're going to do this stuff for global warming. Hey, but what about your own workers? You know, all of these drive-through, the fast food station, I mean, they really exploit younger workers. They don't give them enough hours. Companies like Walmart, where workers can't even get enough hours to get a health plan, you know, and yet they make these billions of dollars. I mean, they can't eat the money, you know, but they use that money to give it to the Republicans that they want to get elected instead of thinking at the workforce. So hopefully, you know, we know that during the Depression of the 30s, and by the way, I was born during that depression. I'm 90 years old. But out of that depression came a lot of great things for workers. That's when they passed the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act, Social Security. And hopefully, of course, we had a great president then during that period of time. So maybe now after this crisis that we're living right now, this nightmare that we're living, when this comes out, maybe we can come out of it a lot stronger when it comes to economic rights and labor rights and universal health care, all of the things that people are really, you know, really working very hard to make happen.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And you know, one of the things that has helped to sustain me during the period that Trump has been president is that virtually from the beginning, we have had people who have been organizing actively and publicly around a number of issues, whether it's, you know, opposing his Muslim bans or the changes in immigration, the locking up of children, on through to the civil rights protests that we have going on right now. People have been very active. One fear that I have is that once Trump is gone, that there might not be as much of a fire for getting out in the streets and making your voice heard effectively, that hey, we'll have gotten past him, maybe things aren't so bad. Do you think that fear is wrong? Do you think that people will still be pushing for, you know, even if it is Biden, to pass some of the changes that you mentioned there, that they'll still be active in response to the inequities that they see in America?
Oh, absolutely. I think this young generation of marchers and protesters, they're not going to sit, they're not going to be quiet. We also know that in the House of Representatives, the Progressive Caucus right now is the largest caucus that they have in the House of Representatives. And so you have people that are working on these issues. They've been working on them for a long time, and they're going to keep plugging. And I think we're going to get the more progressive people elected. And I think, you know, right now in this election, but definitely after the next election, I believe in 2022, we're going to see more progressives that are elected. And that's the one thing I think that the one danger that we have is that young people will not vote. That all of those people that are protesting out there, that they don't believe in quote unquote government, so to speak, and they don't realize how important it is that the things that we are fighting for, that they have to be enacted in terms of laws, legislation. Because if you don't have legislation, then you can't implement the changes that you want. And then there's no accountability. We have to have accountability and enforcement of the type of changes that we want. Otherwise, you know, they might make some changes, you might say cosmetic changes right now, you know, to take the heat off of them. And I'm thinking right now the large corporations that are putting out these nice ads and about Black Lives Matter. But hey, we want more than that. We want Black Lives Matter, Brown Lives Matter, you know, Indigenous Lives Matter, Asian Lives Matter, but we want more than that. We have to get rid of this horrible income inequality that we have, where you have 10% of the corporation and the wealthy families like Walmart that own 90% of the wealth of this country. The resources of the United States of America, the richest country in the world, are not supposed to be in the hands of 10% of the corporations. I'm sorry, but those resources belong to every single citizen and resident of the United States of America, not just to the greedy few or the wealthy few, whichever way you want to, you know, identify them.
You know, the last question I'll ask you is, you mentioned there that we have some good progressives that have gotten elected recently. Some are winning primaries even, you know, in the past few weeks. And then you also mentioned that we have these corporations who are trying to pass off, you know, a slick ad as replacing actual change being done. So I have the same sort of fear with politicians, that it's become very popular to present yourself as a progressive. Everyone seems to support the Green New Deal, at least in their rhetoric. So I'm curious, as someone who is, you've been around and you've seen politicians, some of them good, some of them not so trustworthy. I have a lot of respect for your read on these people. Who are some of the individuals in politics that you see as being particularly trustworthy, you know, that we should keep an eye on issues affecting American workers in the future?
Well, I love to talk about the squad, you know, these young women that are now in the Congress, led by AOC, and by Ms. Cortez. I think that they are kind of the leaders in this. You know, they're very, very vocal. People are really looking up to them. We have, again, I mentioned the Progressive Caucus. We have Congresswoman Dawood Gudihadva from Arizona, who was a big, big leader and committed to the whole issue of the environment. And I do believe that the president will listen to them. I know it's always hard for them because they get pressure from both sides. They get pressure from the big corporations. But the other thing too, you know, this isn't talked about a lot, but I want to mention it because I think it's something that we have to put at the top of the agenda. And I'm talking about public campaign reforms. Because as long as all the politicians have to sit there and they have to make those calls to get money, you know, which takes up probably half of the time that they're in office, which they should be really committing that time to legislating, we have this, the fundamental weakness in government, in electing people to government. Because if the person that gets elected is the one that can raise the most money. Mm-hmm. And this is wrong. We've got to be able to elect people on the issues that they support, you know, on the record that they stand on, and it should not be related to money. So I hope that people will kind of dial back and start looking at this as something that we have to really focus on. And I think everybody in the public will say, yeah, I'll give a few dollars so that people don't have to spend all their money raising money, because it's not often how great the candidate is. It's how much money he has. And unfortunately, I think the institutions like the Democratic National Committee, they are part of the problem, you know, because they also go along with this. If you don't have the money, my son ran for Congress, and he's a public interest attorney, has always done nonprofit work and with liberal issues. But, you know, because he couldn't raise the millions of dollars that they say you have to have before we will even help you. We won't even put you on this red to blue list, you know, or whatever it is. And because you don't have the money. Well, that means that we're always going to be subjected to have millionaires represent us, and not, because the majority of the people in the United States of America are not millionaires. So how can we always expect millionaires to have our best interests at heart? Not saying that some of them don't, they do. But for the majority, and I'm talking about all of the senators that are on vacation right now while people are hurting, you know, this is the result that we get.
I agree. I think it's the issue at the heart of so many other issues we're trying to deal with. And Dolores Huerta, I want to thank you for joining us on the show. It's an honor to be able to speak to you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you. And people can learn more about our organization. Look, our website is DoloresHuerta.org. DoloresHuerta.org.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.